Welcome back to the Drive Podcast. This week we've got a very special guest again, and we've also got my co-host back in action. She's been missing. She's been AWOL for a couple of weeks, but she's back. Were you missing last week? Don't know. We'll come back to that in a minute. I'll make it up as I go along. Rosie, Sober Rosie, aka Brentwood Beauty Legend, aka taking the sober world by storm. How are you doing?
I'm very good. Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's funny you saying Brentwood Beauty and Sober Rosie actually in the same sentence, because I feel like there's very, very two very different people that they are, you know, like who I was when I created that brand is definitely not Sober Rosie. I was in such a different space then. So putting those two people in the same sentence feels like you're actually introducing two characters into this call.
And we'll talk about that for sure, because that's a really, really interesting point, because you set up a successful business while not being sober. So God knows what you're going to do. Now you are sober. But anyway, Crystal, how are you? Are you all right, my darling, before we crack on?
I'm good. It's good to be back. I missed you last week, but you had a great conversation with Annika. That podcast was really well received. What a legend she is.
Yeah, she is a legend. What a story. That's why we want to do a few more of these stories. We weren't going to do too many stories, but people seem to like them. And I think it's nice to have Annika, who's like an active member of the community that we're promoting and want to help out, and, you know, also want to hear her story. And we've got people like Rosie that have come from a completely different background, who I've known for years, who have got a different spin on the whole sober thing as well. So we've got a broad spectrum of people we'll bring on. We've got a lineup. We've got a whole a list of people now that want to come on, now that we've sort of opened the door. So I think we'll be busy. I've got a cater for you, Crystal. When you leave me alone, you know what I mean? I was doing a solo episode the other day. There's nothing weirder than talking and looking at yourself for 15 minutes. Well, I would say it was torture, but it was...
Hang on. We were just, before we started recording, guys, here's for clarity. We were just saying how weird it is, you know, when you're looking at yourself on a Zoom, but me and Rosie both agreed that actually Matt loves it. He loves looking at himself. So don't listen to him when he tries to act modest, because he's not.
I still don't know what that word means.
Exactly. No. That says it all. But you did really well. Your solo podcast was brilliant. I knew you'd be great. You're brilliant at talking. You love looking at yourself. So, you know, what's...
Win-win.
Win-win.
I was talking about Dryfest as well, which I am so excited about. So I think it makes it easier when you're talking about something you're desperate to tell people about. So I could talk about that all day, every day. So that makes it a little bit easier. But anyways, forget about that. Rosie, tell us about you. Tell us about how long you've been sober for. Tell us about your two lives, one which has been recent and one which has been for the rest of time. Tell us.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's such an open-ended question. I don't even really know where to start. So, I mean, our relationship goes back to two very different people. And I think now following you in the sober space and seeing what you've done and your personal evolutions really set an inspiration in me to go on my own personal development journey. And I think with a lot of relationships in throughout your life, you meet people at a point where you reflect that energy and that space that you're in. And I feel like we always got on really well. We had a good relationship for years, Matt. And it's funny how you come together at a certain point and then go away. And then sometimes relationships go away and they never come back. And then you meet people again at other points in your life and you think, fuck, we're now at this other place where it's completely different, and a space probably that we never, honestly, me, and I'm probably speaking for both of us when I say this, never thought I would be this person.
It's fair to say we were not sober 10 years ago. We were probably the complete opposite of sober 10 years ago. Like, if you could have opposite ends of the spectrum, we were definitely there, weren't we?
Yeah, and I think, do you know what? It's just crazy how I think the characters that we are, we're so fast-paced, we're so high energy, we're so ambitious, we are all or nothing in everything that we do. We've always had that really in common. And it's so nice to now be on the opposite side of the spectrum, still being all or nothing, but in a completely different way. And being that person back then, genuinely, if someone had said to me I'd be on the path that I'm on now, I'd have been like, how fucking boring. Yeah. But it's only when you're on this path and that you have come over to the other side, you realise that that was the dark side. Like, there is so much darkness around that way of life. And it's so hard when you're in it to see out of it. And when you've been brought up around environments in cultures that really normalize drinking and partying and celebration, being around alcohol and substance and all this stuff, it there isn't really an attraction to the other side when you think that what you're in is great. And I feel like, I don't know if this goes for a lot of people, this is, I'm very new to this world. I say that I'm very new to this world. I'm like over 400 days sober now, but I still genuinely feel like I'm sometimes at day one. Like I think the character that I am, I have to take it a day at a time. Like I'm very transparent about the fact that I have a lot of clients in my business. I run a aesthetics, wellbeing, skin and skin clinic that's grown over the last 5 years. As well as I have, we've grown together and evolved together. And the business definitely reflects my personal values. And I get so many clients that I never thought would happen asking me about my sobriety. Like it's something that comes up in my business and it's not even related to what we do. And people just really like, how the hell have I done it? And I genuinely think like one day at a time is the only way I've coped. And that's why when I look, I could look at my sober app and like, fucking hell, over 400 days sober. And I'm going to admit that probably about 300 of those I have wanted a drink. Like, and I still do now. There's some days where I wake up and I think, just do one more day. Just do one more day. And if you still want a drink tomorrow, fine, have a fucking drink. But just do one more day. You owe it to yourself to at least do one more day. Even though I'm feeling that draw and I'm feeling that pull, I owe it to myself with how far I've come to just do one more day. And if I still want a drink tomorrow, then I can think about it then. And I guarantee I'll always get to the next day and I think, thank fuck, I didn't drink. And I never want it that second day because I'm so proud of what I've done to get through that resistance and that challenge. And just waking up the other side, knowing how much better you feel. But I'm going off on a tangent now. But back to your question, Matt, like, the two different people, yeah, I never thought I'd be in this space here. And thinking back to where I was when we first met and now coming back together and realigning on this second chapter of life, quite sounded really Essex then, life.
Love a bit of Essex.
I'm not even from Essex. It's just got into me blood. now being here, I think it feels like I'm in, you see through a different lens and there's beauty in sobriety that I just did not even realize was possible and genuinely didn't believe until I'd gotten through the first real challenging period of it. And having that grit and resilience and determination to get through that tough bit at the start, you're then rewarded with so much beauty and fulfillment on the other side of that. But I'm very real about the fact that I do still find it really hard. I think there's probably always going to be some form of an addict in me, because of my personality type, because I have got ADHD and neurodivergence is linked so heavily with addiction. I would never have said I had an addiction problem. It's only in hindsight on the other side of the coin now that I can look back and think I did have a fucking problem. But I would never have said that at the time. And yeah, I suppose I feel very grateful to have had the strength and courage to do it and to be at this point now where I can use my experiences of like real darkness to hopefully inspire others. But like I said, the conversations in my clinic that come up now, and I think we don't even do any of that. And I'm not even that active in the sober world because I'm so scared of falling off the wagon myself on a daily basis. Stepping into this world and actually talking out in this space feels like a real new level of accountability for me that is quite daunting. But I have got to recognize that I've made it to over 400 days sober, and that's a big fucking achievement.
Yeah, exactly. And also your journey started, I remember talking to you way more than 400 days ago about your sober curiousness, and you did you gave it a good go, because your journey doesn't, I think this is a really important thing to talk about, is that my journey didn't start 4 years ago. It started probably about 6 years ago sober curious and looking into it, reading books. And your journey started ages ago, didn't it?
Yeah, definitely. 100%. I think I start lockdown became the problem. Lockdown really magnified and amplified the issues I had with substance. It made it way easier to hide and way more accessible. So it was where I had to be. I was such a high functioning alcohol dependent. in my corporate life, pre-children, pre-COVID, no, it like it wasn't that easy to fit in, if you know what I mean, because I was so high functioning. It was like, it wasn't constant. It didn't matter if I felt shit because I just cracked on. And it just made it so much easier for it to get deeper into me in COVID. Like, it wasn't just drinking a bottle of wine a night from Wednesday to Sunday. It was drinking like a bottle and a half to two bottles. And then it came, turned into hiding bottles. And then it was like the deceit and the deception and the lies around how much I was drinking, when I was drinking, who I was drinking with, having bottles in my car, putting bottles in public bins. Like, what the fuck are you doing? And that realization, that becomes habitual because it's so easy to hide because we're all locked away. So that for me was like, and then when obviously life resumed and I couldn't continue these behaviors with a successful business, I did pretty well at disguising it a lot of the time, but started cancelling clients, not showing up in the right way in my business. Things in my business started to fall apart in reflection of me falling apart, essentially, because everything in your life is mirrored. Life, again, sounded very Essex. But everything is very mirrored, and things in my business started to fall away, which meant I was feeling more stress, more frustration, more challenge, which meant I was drinking more. And it was just this awful cycle until everything fell apart. But to your point, Matt, I remember meeting up in Brentwood Kitchen with you. I don't know if you remember this. You came to meet Andy and you'd started on your sobriety. You came to meet Andy in Brentwood and we met at Brentwood Kitchen. And I had just started to say to you, I can't fucking do this anymore. Like, I need a like taste of what the fuck this is that you're taking, because you look unbelievable. And obviously I knew you from a space of not like from a space of substance and alcohol misuse and all of that as well. So you just like turned up looking fucking on fire. And I was like, hang on a minute. What is this guy taking? What is going on here? If this is what sobriety looks like, I need a bit of this.
It's mad and, it's mad how you lose, like, you don't know that you're you don't know how much of a negative impact it has on your like eyes, on your skin, on your hair, on your image, on your energy, everything. You don't realize that it's sucking the life out of you, innit? And then,
oh my God, everything. And like you say about your eyes as well, like, just it's even like the not just your eyes, but what you see in your eyes, but the lens that you see life through. Like, I remember I have such distinct, clear, and just memories, vivid memories of like just everyday life now are so, so beautiful. I remember when I was like, I must have only been about 8 weeks sober, and my daughter came running down the corridor to me with this. I mean, it was a fucking terrible drawing, let's be honest. But this drawing that she'd drawn of like some sea creature. And she'd been sitting in the playroom doing it for like an hour. And she ran down the corridor and showed me. And I like burst into tears because I was like, I just saw her. I saw all of her in her. It's going to make me emotional now. Like, I just saw her in all her entirety and all her beauty and all the joy and the. I just saw her and I really felt like she was 2.5. I saw her for the first time.
Because that is so beautiful.
Through everything else I'd seen in my life and everything else, every other, it'd been so clouded by fog and worry and fear and just all the crap that comes with alcohol consumption and consistent alcohol consumption. Again, to kind of go back to what you were saying, Matt, about your whole, your journey starts before you go sober, for sure. Like, I'm very transparent. When people ask me, firstly, I have to take it a day at a time because I still want to drink most days, or there's a part of me I still really want to be drunk. I like Drunk Rosie. Like, she's cool. Like, she's fun. But what that does to me outside of that small capsule of time is not good, and it's not worth it, and it's not positive. And the longevity of that feeling, one, it's not authentic or real, and it just doesn't last. It causes the collateral damage to that action. It's just not worth it. But it took me 2 years to go sober, of intermittent periods of stopping. Oh, I've stopped for a while now, I can have one, I'll be all right. The one leads to the two, leads to the three, leads to the 6 a.m. Like, here we are again in someone's fucking kitchen. What am I doing? Like, And then, but I feel like you almost have to do that a few times on your journey to actually get the validation that, yeah, this is shit. Like,
absolutely.
It's almost like it humbles you back to like, yeah, it's still shit. Like, you ain't missing out. Like, here's a reminder of how crap it can be.
Yeah. And I'm, do you know what? I'm so glad you said that, Rosie, because I would say pretty much on a daily basis, we have to remind people in our community exactly of that. It's part of the journey that you have to go on. You have to go back to the dark place to realize how shit it is, and yeah, to want it, and you come out each time wanting it more to get out of it. And so I always say you never go back to a day one, because yeah, you've always learned something, you've always kind of stepped forward in some way. So yeah, thank you for sort of validating that for us.
No, it definitely shows you, I think. And every time as well, if anything like me, especially having kids as well, you still have to parent. And that's the hardest thing with it, is that you're making excuses to your kids. It's not just about yourself. You're fucking lying to everyone around you now. It's not just you. Yeah. And those lies become harder to tell. And that cover becomes harder to put on. And that, like, it all feels more forced. The more time you leave, the more times you go back to it, the more forced and horrible it feels. And the amount of money and alcohol I wasted every single time I did it, pouring everything in the house down the sink and then going out and buying it again. It's like but that cycle is part of it. And I think I've got clients who've started going sober and then they come back and they're like, oh God, I had a drink. And they tell me, and it's almost like I'm now coaching my clients that are coming to me for aesthetic treatments through their sobriety journey as well. Cause they're like, oh God, I was so scared to tell you. And I'm like, but I did it too. Mm. It's part of it. Like, the fact that you feel shit about it is just what you need in that moment to realize it's part of your journey. Like, doesn't discount or invalidate the time that you do.
No, we always say that. Exactly. Like, if you do 300 days sober and then you drink, you don't lose 300 days. It's not snakes and ladders.
No.
But there's an element of you've got to go through a bit of a process again. But you've just had 300 days where you've seen what it's all about. And we always say, like, once you have a peek behind the curtain, you can't really unsee it. Yeah. So say you went back to drinking tomorrow, you can't unsee the last 400 days, and you will always, even if you will always try and get back to that, because there's no difference. It's just, we like to get in this place in our head where we think, oh, I've done doing the right 400 days. I could probably go back and moderate now, but there's people like us.
Yeah.
And actually not like, weirdly, not like Crystal, like, but me and you definitely are.
Yeah.
We are like intense and we're a bit obsessed with stuff, and we have to have 10 drinks rather than one. Crystal actually weirdly went sober, even though she could have one. So it's nice to have that different balance. But most people are like us, that we go through that cycle of thinking we can be like someone, but inevitably we're built differently, which has got its pros and cons as well. But
I actually went through a period, because I'm very much like it's, that is, hits the nail on the head. That's exactly how I am. Like, and even if I did have one, because I could probably go and have one drink, but I'm not going to enjoy the rest of the evening because I'm thinking about the other one. I'm thinking about the next one and I'm not present in the conversation. If you stop me, and I've started to notice, that was my first thing, was that I started to notice on nights out, I'd be at drink four when other people were at drink one or two. Mm. And it's like, and I'm, hang on a minute, this isn't right. And then people are asking me if I want a drink, or I'm the one that's going to get all the drinks, and it's constantly centered around the drink. So even if I did go and have one, I'd be like, one, what's the point? Which is awful. What do you mean, what's the point? I'm meant to be enjoying the company I'm with. It does make you, I have to say, really reevaluate your social groups, though, who you're socializing with, the actual authenticity of those relationships, and the fact that if you do need alcohol or substance to enjoy someone's company, there's a message there.
Also, going out at certain times of day, me and you, Rosie, when we met in Brentwood, like, we, or even in London, we meet like generally in the morning or lunchtime. Like, you won't rarely catch me out at night, because I've realized that I'm boring. Like, I just want to be, I want to have a cup of tea and watch Netflix, or I want to just do some work actually, or do, I want to get to bed early and have my nighttime routine. I don't want to break that. It has to be something quite significant for me to go out at night now. Cause actually I realized that all those nights, I mean, we were out every night back in the day, pretty much, weren't we? Yeah. So I've had my fair share of nights out.
Oh my God, Matt, it used to be a case of, if I wasn't out, I was the fucking problem.
Yeah.
It used to be like, if you're not coming out tonight, then you're excluded.
You're sat.
Yeah, like literally, like, you have been completely outcast from the in crowd. Like, it just, you, that's like, wild how, like, but that stuff still goes on. And that's what I find hard to, like, I can't believe that that still is a culture for people. And I mean, it does serve, it definitely served a period of my life, and I would not be where I am today without it. So I think very grateful for the hard times, the darkness that came with it all, because ultimately you have to go there to be able to come out the other side. Some people do, some people don't, and you just have to be proud of the fact and have the courage to be one of the ones that does. And like another thing as well, when I say about the staying sober one day at a time, I do, like a lot of people say, don't you feel like you're missing out? Like, yeah and no. Like, I still, there's still a little bit of me, like when I've still got friends that drink, I've got friends that drink, and there'll be like parties, and I know it's not in my best interest to go to those for long. And if I do, or at all, if I go to them, I only go for sort of like an hour, hour and a half, because I find it tense, find it stressful. I'm around a lot of alcohol. Although no one's really encouraging me to drink, I'm still in an environment that just isn't in my best interest. And it takes a lot of strength, a lot of energy for me to really stay true to my decision when I can see everyone having a good time around me. You then don't see them the next day when they're falling apart like you used to. You're in that environment where you're seeing the fun. So people always say, do you feel like you're missing out? But yeah, sometimes. But on the other side of it, no. Because I never wake up regretting my decision to not drink, but I used to wake up regretting that I drank. So although like in the moment, yes, I do feel like I'm missing out. And sometimes it's like, oh, I wasn't part of that, or I wasn't part of this. Waking up the next day, I never regret not drinking.
Yeah, nobody does, do they? No. You're never going to regret that decision. I think you raise a really good point that part of the problem with how we perceive alcohol in society is the fact that we see the benefits. We see everybody being confident and dancing and having a laugh. But like you say, we're not seeing people behind closed doors having panic attacks, feeling depressed, feeling suicidal even. We're not seeing that side.
When everyone is in that space, they hide away.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the space that's the place that's not visible. And also actually touching on that, something that I did really want to actually talk about, because I think it can be quite toxic, is I felt like I was failing sobriety at the start, which is why I think it's taken me so long to feel confident in sobriety. I really felt like I was failing in sobriety when I first went sober, because I didn't enjoy it. And I think for some people, you go sober and it is instant relief, like energy, you feel amazing, clarity, feels good, all this stuff is like super positive. I think there is also a group of people, and I was in this group of people, where it gets worse before it gets better. Because I saw a great video actually that demonstrated this. It was this psychotherapist, so don't quote me on that, psychotherapist, psychiatrist, psychologist, one of those three, I'm not going to clarify which because I don't know, a person that works with the mind, that had a jug with ping pong balls in it. And she was demonstrating that when you, so all of this is your body and this is your trauma, or your all the bad things that have happened to you, your negative self-beliefs, your self-talk is all sitting at the bottom of your body, and like hidden and suppressed and pushed down, and really like you're just drinking and all this stuff that you're doing, all this escapism, all these addictions that you've got, are just basically suppressing and keeping it low. And when you start to take positive action to recover or create better habits from those traumas, you start to pour water into that jug, and that water brings all of that trauma to the surface. And although you're thinking, oh my God, I'm doing all this stuff that's meant to be good and I'm meant to feel amazing, why the hell can I not stop crying? Why am I, my panic attacks getting worse? This isn't the way it's meant to be. Because all you see online and a lot of what you see digitally is all the joy and the euphoria and the clarity and all the great stuff that comes with sobriety, which does eventually for that group of people. But you kind of have to sit in that place of like, this is horrible. And that's even harder to then not reach for the drink, because all you want to do is push it back down. And I feel like I really felt like I was doing it wrong when I first started, because I was definitely in that category where it felt so hard and so rough. And there were days when I was like, I just don't even want to be here right now. I'm so committed to the path. I'm not going to drink, but this is so painful. I must, like, surely not every, no one else seems to be going through this. Everyone else seems to be having an amazing time. Am I, is there something I'm doing wrong? Am I meant to go sober in a different way? Like, no, it's just, that's what your recovery looks like, or that's what your healing look, that looks like. Your journeys are allowed to be different. And if that sobriety brings up some real shit before it feels good, allow it and hold space for it, because that is part of your journey to the glory, to the joy, to the euphoria. It's coming. It's just everyone gets it in different places. And some people feel amazing straight away. And then a year later, you'll be like, wham, that train of trauma hits. And you're like, fuck.
Yeah.
Why do I now feel awful? Whereas some people get it straight away. And I think it's just the curse of comparison is rife in every area of our lives, right? Constantly with social media and things like that. We're always comparing the way we look, our lives, our financial status, our jobs, our careers, our children, all the, like, everything. And I think that can bleed into sobriety as well. Just from an egotistical place, we think we're doing it wrong, or our journey doesn't look as good or as happy. And I definitely went through that. So if anyone that's listening is going through that phase where it feels shit right now, just know it is temporary and hold true to what your journey is. And you will get there. Because on the other side of all that crap is so much, it's just so much amazing stuff. Like, yeah, that's what I wanted to talk about.
You put that so well, Rosie. And I think, you know, like you say, everybody's journey is individual. And actually, you know, it takes time to learn how to process our feelings, how to feel those feelings, how to heal. What do we need to do to heal? You know, it's a whole journey in itself. And what we try and do with dry, and, you know, it can be a tricky balance, is we try to be positive. We want it to be an uplifting, fun community. But at the same time, we do say to people, you know, be honest, express how you feel. And so we do have people that come on and they'll post into the community when they're having a hard time. And we do want them to do that because, yeah, it's not all sweetness and light. There are really hard times. And
yeah,
thank you for raising that, because I think something resonates.
Sorry, excuse me. Something I realized when I started to experience that joy that I was seeing everywhere, and I was like, oh, yay, I've made it, was that not only does it, sobriety emphasize the good feelings, it magnifies all the feelings.
Yeah.
So it's not, the good feels great, but the bad can feel real bad sometimes. And I think just having that awareness that this isn't necessarily an emotion that I've never felt before. I've just felt a much more diluted version of it because I've not had the awareness around holding the space for myself.
Oh, I love that. A diluted version. That's such a good way of putting it. Because we numb so much when we drink alcohol and take drugs, don't we? So yeah, we're really feeling the full force of the good emotions and the bad.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
It's a really good analogy as well with the ping pong balls in the water. I've never heard that. And it makes a lot of sense as well. And it's weird because when I, like you say, everyone's different. Like when I was one of them people that went sober and just was like, bing, everyone, the lights came on. In fact, I recorded a reel this afternoon. I went for a walk down the river and I was just like everything was just like ultra bright. And I could hear all the birds that were ultra loud. And I felt like everyone had just turned the colors and vibrancy up of life. Cause it's like the first day of spring. It's like hot outside. It feels good. It just felt really nice. And I thought, God, this is what sobriety is all about. And that reminded me of like an early sober feeling. And I was pretty much like straight away, like someone flicked a switch. And I was like, bang. The only thing I suffered with negatively was sleep for a few weeks, where I was sleeping loads. I was knackered. I was exhausted. My body just needed months of sleep. But my dreams were fucking wild. Like I was having some crazy, I was like waking up in a pool of sweat. Like the weirdest shit was happening. I was getting murdered, assassinated, kidnapped, like all this stuff. And I now know, because I coach people and help people, and it's nice to be able to give them that reassurance, because they're like a week into it and they're like, what is going on with these dreams? It's absolutely mad. I'm like, don't worry about it. It's actually one of the biggest incentives not to go back to drink, because that's one of the things I talk about, where you have sort of got to start again. You don't lose the 300 days, but you do sort of have to go through a little process again. One of those things would be getting rid of all them toxins again. But that was really the only negative thing to me that came to me. So it's really interesting hearing other people's stories about how negative it was for them and how hard it was for them to start with, but also nice to hear that you do get there in the end ultimately.
Yeah, I think it highlights more as well that you're not aware how much you need to heal from. I think like being high functioning, because I didn't drink, and even when I was at my worst, still didn't drink every single day. So you automatically assume you don't have a problem with alcohol because you're not drinking at 10 a.m. You're not relying on it every single day. You're just drinking a lot when you do drink. And I read something once that was like, if you turn to alcohol or substance or any form of behavior or habit in a time of challenge, if you're feeling, if it's a challenging emotion, or if you're like stressed, or if you're annoyed, or if you're angry, or if you're upset, if any of those difficult emotions lead you to reach for XYZ, you have a problem. Like, that is, you're not reaching for it at a time when you're trying to achieve something positive. So even like when you go out, you're reaching for alcohol because you're insecure. Like, it's not because you want to feel confident. You want to feel confident from a place of insecurity. So like, what's, if it's a negative emotion that's leading you to that, like, you need to review your relationship with what you're doing. But I think because we constantly focus on the positives, we don't think we have a problem, and or we don't think we've got a negative relationship with it, or we don't realize how much trauma or whatever it is that we've got to heal from. And like, I had a fairly good upbringing, like no big traumas or big T's, as the therapist would say, like just lots of little T's, where I grew up in an environment where my mum drank nearly every day, wine at dinner. And like, that is a very cultural thing. When you have children, you realize that you're expected as a mum to drink wine at 5 to cope with your own decisions, like, of having children. Like, you've chosen to have children, great, drink wine at 5 because it's the only way you can survive. And then when you choose to break out of that norm, because that's all what we've been brought up with as well, like, that's what I saw. I saw my parents drinking when they celebrated. I saw my mum drinking most days when she would cook. And you don't realize as a child how much what you see is really basically going to turn into what you do. And like, as soon as I definitely drank more regularly after children. Mm-hmm. And I do genuinely believe that's because of what I witnessed growing up. Not that either of my parents, I would say, have a problem with alcohol necessarily. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. That's their thing to explore. But yeah, because of what you see, just ingrained deep in you is to just pick up the habits that you have been a witness to.
And which is why it's so important, I think. And so it's such a proud thing to do. Like, for you, your kids are so young, they're probably never, if you stayed sober for the rest 10 years, they're not going to remember you drinking ever, which is pretty magical, really. I've got the same, Crystal's got the same. Her and her husband don't even drink. So look, what an environment to bring your kids up in. So,
yeah, it's amazing. To be fair, my partner does drink, but he can switch on, switch off. Like, he is very, and actually it's something that we have talked about quite a lot. And I'll be honest, he doesn't even know I'm going to say this. I'll be honest, I don't know how I feel about it. Like, does it concern me that potentially one day I will resent him for still drinking? Yeah, I am worried that that might happen one day, because I've seen how damaging it can be to me. And also, do I think that he doesn't realize the courage and strength I've had to do it, having had a problem? Yeah, and that bothers me, because for someone that doesn't have a problem, they have no idea how much it takes for someone that does have those tendencies to actually commit and stay with yourself when you're around it. He's very good, my partner. Like, he doesn't drink around me. And if he does go out with his friends and have a drink, he won't come home. That sounds awful. No.
That's the best way. I found that as well.
But if he comes home, we basically found that after it's like coming home high to a heroin addict. Like, and he was like, yeah, but that's not what it's like. And I'm like, but it is. You don't understand, because you're not the heroin addict. You're the one that like can do this and feel okay tomorrow. And like, I'm not saying I'm a heroin addict, because I definitely wasn't, but it's the same, it applies, it's the same model, you know.
Yeah, it's all drugs at the end of the day. And it's funny how we call it alcohol and drugs like they're two separate things. And we need to remember it is a drug. Yeah.
And it's hard though. It is really hard, particularly as a woman of childbearing age, the amount of fucking times people ask me if I'm pregnant.
Yeah. Like,
no, I'm not pregnant.
Oh.
Still not pregnant. I wasn't pregnant last time you asked me this.
So boring. Still
not pregnant this time. Yeah. And that does get frustrating, I have to say. Because I do, like, much to what you said, Crystal, it's the one thing people do ask you why you're not doing it. Rather than why you are doing it. Like, if I turned up and literally like whacked a gram of coke out on the side, people would be like, right, what the fuck are you doing? If I turn up and pour myself a drink, people are like, oh, top me up. Like, sharing's caring and all that shit. Like, it's just not the same. And it needs to be categorized in the same way, particularly for people like Matt, like you said, like me and you, who are very intense, all or nothing. It's in the same category.
You never used to pry a coke, Rosie. Don't pretend. it's always other people in the day, in the party days. It's a great way of putting it, though. You're like 100% right. And I find, even when my missus went 3 years without drinking. She started drinking this year or last year, but she can. It doesn't really matter to her. She can sort of have one here and there, but she obviously does go out with the girls sometimes. And she could come home and a bit drunk, and I'm a bit, even though I'm sitting there like totally stone cold sober with peppermint tea and it's 10 o'clock at night, I'm a bit jealous that she's a mess. I'm like,
Oh my God, I totally get that, because this is what I said. I was like, drunk me is great. Like, there's nothing about drunk me I don't like. I was an absolute fucking hoot. Like, genuinely, I used to love the feeling of being drunk. I used to enjoy the confidence of it. All of that stuff that comes with being a bit drunk feels great. There's nothing about going sober that stops that from feeling good. Like, going sober doesn't change how good you feel when you're drunk. And I think that's something really, a real lesson in all of it as well, is like, she's just done. Like, she's had her bit. Like, she's still in there for sure, but she has had her time. Like, she had her chapter, and now it's about this next chapter for me. And she'll always be in there, and she comes out in other ways now. Like, particularly for me, when I stop drinking, it can feel very restrictive when you stop doing something that you essentially love and need to feel good. And for me, I very quickly realized that I was coming at sobriety from a place of restriction and deprivation and what didn't feel expansive and exciting. And then obviously started to feel all this fucking trauma come up and was like, oh my God, this heavily sucks. And I started dancing. And when I started dancing, I've realized how much joy you can get from something else. And I've always wanted to dance, and I've always been shit scared. And I had a bit of a fuck it moment where I was like, I literally never have to see any of these bitches again if I don't want to. I've got to go and try something, because I feel so held back right now. I feel like I'm literally in prison, stopping myself from drinking, stopping myself from going out. I'm not going to live, just sit inside these four walls for the rest of my life just to be sober. I've got to find something that gets me out and makes me feel as good, if not better. And oh my God, it's just, it lights me up in a way that is so real and so raw without alcohol. I feel like I do when I drink, but it's real. It's not that.
I love that. What kind of dancing, Rosie?
Oh, I don't fucking care. I'll do whatever. Like,
just like when you're out or like going to classes.
No, I do. I did join a dance class. I joined a community in Leon C. It's amazing. Like, there's like 35, 40 of us in the class every week. And the connections that I found in those women, because they're like-minded, some of them are mums, some of them are sober. Like, we're all there for the same reason, that we just want to feel good, have a nice time, and like just like light up a part of us that doesn't get that fire anywhere else.
That sounds like a bit amazing. Of me.
Yeah, so genuinely, actually now, when I feel like, if I'm having a shit time, because I tend to like sit and fester if I'm angry or if I'm upset, I'll sit and I'll just get really annoyed. And that's when I would normally go to the fridge and get a drink. And now, I'm not joking, my partner thinks I'm fucking crazy. I go to the kitchen and put like one of my favourite songs on and just dance like a slut. And I'm like, now I feel great. Like, it's actually like wild. Like, I just go and put my favorite song on and just dance. And I feel like I don't need that drink. It's moved the energy around. Movement has just freed me from the shackles of whatever that emotion was. And it's allowed me to process it. in a different way to drinking. So I think I definitely do think finding your thing outside of the bottle helps massively with your journey and with just with sticking to it. Because if you constantly come to a place of restriction, it's not sustainable. Like, you need to find something that, and if the sobriety is what lights you up, go full, like with you, Matt. Like, what you've done is absolutely incredible. Like, the sobriety for you is obviously the thing that has just, like, it just lights you up in a way like nothing else.
But then equally, it's important, I think, like, to your point, it's a really good point made, is like to find the next thing. So you've got to keep learning, you've got to keep doing things, you've got to keep your mind busy. Like, I had a really good week last week where I was creating something that was like lighting me up, and running really lights me up, going to the gym really lights me up, doing podcasts really lights me up, and all these things make me feel good all the time. So it's really weird, because you drink because you want to feel good for some of the time, but you want to feel shit for the rest of the time. Whereas when you go sober, you feel good virtually all the time, especially if you keep doing these things. But if you stop doing them, and if you just sit in those four walls and just live the life you always lived without the drink, you're going to end up drinking again, because that's not what it's all about. So
you don't want to sit at home with FOMO, because interesting.
It's so often what people do, though.
Yeah,
so they're like, oh, I've stopped drinking, so I'm staying in for January. Well done, but what about February?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, are you just going to stay in for the rest of your life? Like, because you can't do that.
Yeah, and you know, maybe there is a point, you need to hibernate, but like you said, at some point you need to figure out what it is that lights you up. And it's been
anything. And I think it's just allowing yourself to explore with that. Like, I did a ballet class.
Oh, wow.
I should not have done a ballet class. Like, that was not the dance for me.
But you explored it.
Exactly. And like I said, I never saw them again. Totally, like, fell apart. It absolutely tanked. I tanked. It felt awful. It was very embarrassing. But I knew what wasn't for me. And there's as much value in finding what's not for you as there is as finding what is for you. And the only way you're going to figure it out is by trying.
Because I've realized that I am actually even more confident than I thought I was, because I thought I needed a bit of booze to dance. Turns out I don't. Like, Matt always says about my wedding, like, he's like, I've never seen a more like drunk, sober person, because I sort of seemed drunk because I was just high off the music, the people. And I get like that on a night out, and I've realized that I love dancing. I love going to gigs. I love the music. And it's been so liberating to realize that it wasn't the alcohol. And actually, that took the credit for the good times. But actually, it was the company, the music, the dancing. That's where the real fun for me is, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
That's a very nice way to wrap it up, Crystal Day. Right, Rosie, where can people find you on Instagram or wherever? What's the best way to follow you and to see your slutty dancing, in your own words?
You're welcome. So I am on Instagram at Sober Rosie. I am very new to posting anything about my sobriety, because I have felt honestly quite scared. It's very vulnerable, and it is scary, but I'm at a point now where I'm gonna start sharing more about the challenges that I've faced and how I've overcome them, and just experience finding joy outside of drinking. I'm on Instagram at Sober Rosie.
Brilliant. And we're gonna see you at some dry stuff, hopefully dry fests, some
100%.
Dry events. We'll get you on some lives and that good stuff as well. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
For bringing a different,
it's been lovely
dynamic to it all, different energy, and just super honest. So I think people will get loads out of that. All right, guys, thank you so much. We'll see you next week for another edition of the Dry Podcast. Thank you.